All right, if you've got your Bibles, turn with me to First Samuel chapter 7. We're going to talk about what it looks like when God gets involved in our life. If you remember from last week, we talked about how the Israelites, they wanted to use God as this weapon, as this, we are favored nation status. We have this thing, this furniture that really is a good luck charm, and we're going to take it into battle with us. And the Philistines thought the same thing. The enemies of God's people thought the same thing. And that's not the way that it works. Because God's people were trying to be God's people without God being involved with the people. The sons of Eli, the high priest, they were at their very core corrupt. I mean, they were the ones who were to administer over the worship. They were the ones who were to administer over the sacrifices. And everything that they did was for self-gratification, was to lift themselves up, was to make money off of their position. And the people followed right along with that. So when so one thing that we learned is when the spiritual leadership is corrupt, it doesn't take long, not even a generation, for the people to be just as corrupt, just as lost. And so we have a situation where the Ark of the Covenant, the representative place of God, is captured. The Israelites are routed. And then it comes back and they don't know what to do with it. And so in chapter 7 of 1 Samuel, we read, So it was a long time, 20 years in all, that the Ark remained in Kiriath. And all the people of Israel mourned and sought after the Lord. Now, it's curious to note that why were they mourning? I mean, they've got the ark back for 20 years. I mean, this isn't just, something happens on a Tuesday and so by next Wednesday, here we are again. This isn't, we're talking 20 years has gone by. The ark is back and presumably the sacrifices are continuing and the worship is taking place and all that, but they're still mourning. I wonder why that is. It's because they don't really know what to do. They really don't have any direction about how to really connect with this true and living God. See, for 20 years, they've realized that our story, the story of our life, it really doesn't have to involve God. I mean, He can be there. I mean, for goodness sake, His ark was there. You remember what we talked about last week about how important this was and how precise it was and how holy and all that? I mean, and they've got it back and it was there, but God really wasn't involved. And we can do that too. I mean, we can have a church home and a family and activities and all this thing, but God doesn't really have to be involved. And the reality is that our life, our story, is not necessarily easier when He is involved. You see, that was the mistake that they made in prior generations, was that, life got really, really hard there, really, really fast. Oh, well, let's go back and get God and let's bring Him into our lives and He'll make things. It didn't work that way, did it? In Matthew chapter 14 and 22, we read in 22 through 30 about Jesus walking on water. Man, great passage. VBSs upon VBSs have been built around this passage. I mean, there are more flannel graph, Bible lessons about this than you could shake a stick at. Jesus has gotten through preaching. He disperses the crowd. He tells His disciples, get in the boat and go across the river, or go across the sea. So what do? They get in the boat. They start rowing across the Sea of Galilee. And as happens on that, in the geography of that, a storm comes up and the wind and the waves are buffeting the boat. And about the third watch, it says that Jesus came out to them walking on the water. A couple of things. Jesus told them to get in the boat and go away. Do you think that He had any inclination about what the weather was going to be like? Probably. Now, he wasn't just saying, ha, I'm going to get these guys. You know, they didn't like put a scorpion in his sandal earlier. And so now he's going to get them back by sending them out into a boat that's going to capsize and sink. He's just saying, look, do what I tell you to do. There's no guarantee that it's going to be smooth sailing. So they get out there and he comes walking on the water and they're afraid. And he says, don't be afraid, it's me. And then Peter says, Lord, if it is you, if it's you, then tell me, just like you tell me to get into this boat, tell me to get out of this boat and come to you. And then Peter, and then Jesus says, come, then come on. Peter gets out of the boat, walks, he sees the wind, he sees the waves, he starts to sink. And he cries out, Lord, save me. You know what Jesus didn't do? Later on in that passage, he saves him. The winds die down and he transports them right to the shore. You know what Jesus didn't do? He didn't say, okay, Peter, hold on a second. Let me calm this storm down for a second so it'll be easy for you to walk on this water with me. Let me make it all. Let me get this ocean, this sea, this big giant lake. Let me get this just glassy for you, so that you will know that it's so that you can stay focused on me. Jesus called Peter out of the boat into the storm with the winds and the waves still rocking the boat. With God involved, it doesn't get easier. But our story is better when God is involved. He doesn't have to be in it. It's not going to make it any easier, but it always makes it better. One of the things that we're going to see here as we go through this passage in 1 Samuel chapter 7, things that we need to understand. The first thing about understanding the God being involved is that God's involvement is not limited. God doesn't have just kind of a supporting cast role in the story of our life. And the reality is that realignment with God. See, this is what has to happen over and over and over again. Realignment with the will of God. It's a common plot line in our story. It happens over and over and over again. It's kind of repetitive in its occurrences. You see, as we read through this, they're mourning. They sought after they mourned and they sought after the Lord. And Samuel said to the whole house of Israel, "If you're returning to the Lord with all of your hearts, then rid yourselves of the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths, and commit yourselves to the Lord and serve Him only. And He'll deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines." You see, one of the things that Samuel wanted him to learn at that point, after 20 years of mourning and seeking after the Lord. I mean, it says right there, they were for 20 years they mourned and sought. They weren't comforted, even though Jesus says that those who mourn will be comforted. You know, the pure in heart, they shall see God. They weren't seeing Him. They weren't being comforted. Because getting God involved in our lives, in our story, it consumes our hearts. It isn't something where we just find a place for Him, where we just kind of carve out a little section of life for God. You see, that's what they were doing. And unfortunately, some 6 or 7,000 years later, that's what we do too, because we mourn, don't we? We walk around confused and concerned and worried and distraught about a lot of things, and life happens to us and we just don't understand, and we cry and are concerned over all of this that's going on, because we're seeking after the Lord, but just like they do, it's not wholeheartedly. Did you catch what he had to say to them? Did you catch the scolding he gave them in those first couple of verses? He says, look, if you're returning to the Lord, for 20 years they've had the ark, they've mourned, they've sought. If you are returning, and I think he says, if you're really returning to the Lord, then get rid of the foreign gods. You see the picture he's painting for us? They still had foreign gods sitting right next to the Ark of the Covenant, put in a prominent place right there in their hearts. They were still trying to, they were seeking God, but they were also hedging their bets a little bit with these other gods that they've also heard about. You see, the problem is that when they came out of Egypt, Yahweh was the God of deliverance. I mean, they saw that. The 10 plagues were evident. I mean, He is the God of deliverance. And so when we need to be delivered, Yahweh, He's our man. But can He make the crops grow? But can he bring the rain? Can He make us? We need a bunch of kids and youngins and a big family to work this land. Can he give us fertility? And so you know what they do? They look around. And they say, well, what's working out for everybody else around us? Oh well, okay. Well, they're paying attention to this thing, and they've got that going on, and oh, their crops are real good. What's their God like? And so that's what they did. So they gathered up all the extra. Well, Yahweh, He's our man. If we need deliverance, He can. But just in case He's not a good farmer God, we're gonna honor this thing over here too. And now you've got prominence, Yahweh, but we want this, we want the crop God and the rain God and the fertility God and all that, just to hedge our bets a little bit. And we do that, don't we? We do that. You're the God of precision on Sunday. But I'm still going to save for a rainy day. We say, God, you're the God of certain things, but you just don't understand how the world works, and I've got to put other things not before you but next to you. I mean, they're not God. I have no other gods before you, but can I put a little one right next to you? Can I put something, right, but, what if he's just sort of right back to the left? I mean, I know there's a prominence on the right, but this other one is going to be kind of back from you and to the left. Can I just do that? That's got to be okay. And so we mourn because there's no peace. There's no real relation. And he says, look, if you want God, get rid of it all. Get rid of the Baals, the Asherahs, all of the high places. And commit yourself. The same thing that David tells Solomon in 1 Chronicles 28:9. You, my son, acknowledge God, the God of your father. Serve Him with wholehearted devotion and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches every heart and understands every desire and every thought. And if you seek Him, He will be found by you, but if you forsake Him, He'll reject you forever. You see, God understands when we're hedging our bets. And when we're praying to the Lord, but we're also making sure that we take care of things, our way. I mean, when we are wholeheartedly devoted to God, there are some sayings that we will stop saying. Sayings like, hey, how's your day going? Well, I'm still here. I'm on the right side, the grassy side of the dirt. Well, when we're wholehearted for God, a good day is when we're in the will of God. Like Paul said, I'm torn. I don't know what I want more, to go to be with Him or to stay here. Because if I stay here, every day is consumed with His will. But if I go to be with Him, well, that's a no-brainer. You do the math. But not us. Oh, we fear that. We will do anything to avoid that. He says, look, get wholehearted to God or you'll continue to mourn. He then goes on, involving God is an exercise in unity. Then Samuel said, assemble. I've got that circled in my Bible. Assemble. When all else fails, assemble. When everything's going wrong, when you don't know what to do, assemble. Get together. Get all of Israel at Mizpah, and I will intercede with you. I will intercede with the Lord. And when they assembled at Mizpah, they drew water and poured it out before the Lord. On that day they fasted, and there they confessed, we've sinned against the Lord. And that's when Samuel was the leader of all of Israel. You see, in 1 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 5, he says, get together. It's an exercise in unity. In Ephesians chapter 4, 1 through 6, and then also 11 through 13, Paul tells us, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. And he says to prepare God's people. All of this, he said, look, I made some to be elders, some to be deacons, some to be apostles, some to be preachers, some to be teachers, some to be this, some to be that. Some to cook, some to clean, some to take care of, some to make phone calls, some to send texts. I made people to do all this stuff to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body might be built up until we reach all unity in the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature. Because unity is not something we create, it's something we join. You see, there's a unity of the Spirit that is happening. We don't make it happen, we just align ourselves with it. And in order to get God involved in our life, and not a limited involvement, not a half-hearted involvement, not a, God, you're kind of center stage, but there's other things that take, you know, side stage, that it is an exercise in unity. And if we cannot be unified as a body, then God doesn't have our whole heart. The Bible says that that is a sure recipe for rejection. Now, the thing about it is that make all kinds of art. It doesn't say, you know, agreement. It doesn't say 100% that, you know, but it says unity. And you know what that means? The only thing that we have to agree on is who's in charge and what we're supposed to do about it. See, God is in charge. He is in ultimate control. And what we are to be doing about that is letting as many people who don't know that, know that. That's what we are to be unified. We're to be unified about that we are God's. He's not ours, we are His, and we need to be letting people know that. Getting involved with God, getting God, being wholehearted for God. It's an exercise in unity, and there is no other option. It isn't something where you say, well, I'm going to go off and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do my thing. Y'all do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. Me and God, I've heard this. Oh my goodness. If I had a dime for every time I heard this, I'd have a lot of dimes. Oh no, me and God. Yeah, so, you know, man, where do you go to church? Oh, where are you serving? Where's your ministry? No. I don't do the organized religion thing. Okay. And then they always follow it up with, God and I, we have an understanding. You know what I say? Oh, do you now? I think you have an understanding. But God's got this body. And it doesn't ever say, join the understanding. It's, we are part of the body. And we are to be unified. We are to be working together. Because that's what it looks like to be a part of God. God's not a part of us. We are a part of Him. He is the entire picture. We belong to it. Getting involved is an exercise in unity. Involving God is no walk in the park. I mean, like I said, it doesn't get easier. It gets better, but it doesn't get easier. Keep reading with me in 1 Samuel 7 and 7. When the Philistines heard that Israel had assembled at Mizpah, the rulers of the Philistines came up to attack them. And when the Israelites heard that, they were afraid because of the Philistines. So the Philistines see that, oh, we got them all in one spot. I mean, if you think, you know, a really good battle strategy is spread out. I mean, if you're a coach of a soccer team or a basketball team, how many times, hey, spread out. You know, we could guard you with one player right now. But God says, no, y'all get to quit spreading out, get together. Won't the enemy be able to find us all? Won't it be a lot more dangerous? Well, yeah, it will. Oh, because you're going to protect us all and you're going to ward off the enemy and he's not going to catch us. You're going to camouflage us. No. I want you all together so that you're more visible for the enemy. What? Yeah, I want you all together so that you're more visible to the enemy. And so that the battle between you and the enemy will be not just this little skirmish over here and a skirmish over there. It'll be epic. And everyone that's not in the battle, they will see the battle. Well, I don't want to be in the battle. I was kind of banking on you sort of making that not happen, God. No, it's going to happen. The Philistines, they're going to see you assembled. The enemies of the Lord, they're going to recognize an easy target when they see it, and they're going to come after you. And some of you are going to die. And that's okay. Jesus understood this. With God involved, it isn't easier. It's better, but it's not easier. You see, in Mark 14, 32 through 36, Jesus says in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before He was crucified, I mean, He is literally going to be beaten within an inch of His life, and He's going to be nailed to a cross in just a matter of hours. And you know what He's doing? Oh, He's just having coffee with His friends, just, you know, sort of waiting for it. Well, hey, I got this thing that's going to happen in a few hours here. No, we got some time. Let's go to the movies. No. He was in the garden praying. He says, my soul, it's overwhelmed to the point of death. And he said to God, please, with you all things are possible. So please take this cup from me. You know what Jesus was saying there? He says, he uses God's own words against him. He says, with you all things are possible. There is another way. Did you realize that? Jesus is saying, God, you could figure out another way. And God said, yeah, there could be another way, but this is the worst way. Because God's not going to just do it any old way. He's going to pick the absolute worst possible way. And Jesus says, not my will, but your will. You want to question whether God loves us? You want to question whether or not God will deliver us? You might question His tactics, but you can't question His heart. Because He's all in. And that night in the garden proves it. Even before the crucifixion, because isn't the anticipation almost worse? He says, oh no. There might be other ways, but this is the worst. So we might question his ways, but we can't question his heart. See, the thing that the Israelites learned, the thing that Jesus proved, the thing that we have got to wrap our minds around is that getting God involved the only way. It's not a way. It's the only way to experience victory. You see, what happened here is that they didn't stop crying out to the Lord. Then Samuel sacrificed to burn offerings. The Philistines drew near. They engaged Israel in battle. But that day the Lord thundered with loud thunder against them. And threw the Philistines into a panic. And they were routed before Israel. The men of Israel rushed out of Mizpah, pursued the Philistines, slaughtering them along the way to the point below Beth-Kar. And then Samuel took this stone, lifted it up, and that's where we get the song, you know, lift my Ebenezer. And he says, what that means is God has brought us this far. When we offer God, when we give Him our whole heart, when we eliminate all other gods. I mean, we can have some God in our life. We'll set up next to some other gods in our life. And we'll continue to mourn. And we'll continue to seek. But we will not find. It's only when we involve God in our whole heart, where there are no other gods depended upon, when there are no bets to be hedged and insurance policies to take out, that we will experience that wholehearted devotion, where we will experience the fear of being in the will of God. But we will know that we can rush headlong into battle and experience true victory. This morning, how far can you say God has brought you? Can we lift up our Ebenezer and say God has brought us this far? Or in the back of our minds, can we say, hey, look how far I've come. And oh yeah, by the way, I go to church. How involved is God in your story? That's the only question I had. How involved is God in your story? David tells Solomon, God knows the motives of our hearts. He knows when we say things, when we sing songs, when we offer prayers. He knows the motives of our heart. Where are those motives this morning? Does God have your whole heart? Has God brought you this far? This morning, do you want God to take you the rest of the way? Are you tired? Are you mourning the fact that it has been you and you alone that's brought you this far? Maybe with a little dash of God, a little dash of religion, a little church blended in there, but how far would you like God to take you? It won't be easy, but it'll be better. Confess His name this morning. Put Him on in baptism. Give Him your whole heart as we stand and as we sing the song of invitation.